let's call the meeting to order. We want to, we have a lot to cover. We would like to keep our closing time at 10 o'clock consistent and appropriate for the activity afterwards. So we would welcome you here and appreciate your attendance. The first thing we have is the approval of the minutes. We're looking for a motion on that.
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we will now open the time for public comment.
Mayor, I'm sorry, I missed the motion and the second.
Okay. Second, cool. Jeff.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, anyone like to address this group? Please.
Martin Jolly at Mott. I'm just a recreational rider. I'd like in the future the committee to consider a report on Highway 89 through Davis County. Carrying lots of different versions of what's taking place up there. When we ride to Ogden and Brigham City from Salt Lake, when we go east, we take 89. I understand it's going to be reconfigured and realigned and all kinds of fun things are taking place there. The second thing is, when will the Legacy Highway trail be completed? It's been out of commission for over a year. I hear rumors on that as well. If it's going to be this month or next month, I don't know. So maybe in the future we could receive a report on that.
We'll see what we do on that.
Tour of Utah is coming up. I was on staff a couple of years ago, and it's really fun to follow that through different communities. There's really a variance in support on the community level for that event. It's good and bad, and if you're involved, I encourage you to be really involved. It makes a difference for the riders and for the participants and the people who come out to watch the tour. And then finally, a question on definition. On our trails, we have motorized, non-motorized trails. Are electric bikes considered motorized? Can the electric bikes be considered, be used on our mountain trails?
If they have a motor, they're motorized.
Electric bikes, yeah. Are motorized.
Because you see it in Moab especially, like they have a lot of no e-bikes, so.
Makes sense. That's the definition, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. All righty. Thanks for your comments.
Can I respond to a couple of Elliot's?
Absolutely.
So Highway 89, there's an open house next Tuesday from 4:30 to 7. Heidi, do you have the... We can send out information.
I can send out. And I was just pulling up, I was speaking with a consultant on that project, and she just sent me a summary.
Okay. So maybe we can get that information
absolutely.
To you, Elliot. Jeff may be able to provide information on Legacy Trail real quick for
you. Yeah, let me just give you a quick update on Legacy. That project's become really frustrating for all of us in Davis County. And Questar Gas was originally going to reopen that trail in May. And then it was June 1st, and then July 1st, and now it's probably August 1st. I was out there just last Friday and talking to those guys, and they're blaming it on the weather. It's really muddy out there, but they should have expected that it's high groundwater anyway. But they're moving like turtles. I know UDOT is extremely frustrated with the way that's going, but it's got to dry out so that they can regrade it and get the trail back in. They're still laying some pipe on the very north end of that project. They were last Friday, so we're probably going to be knocked out half the summer before we get that reopened, and I hope to avoid this ever again. It's just too long to have that caliber of a trail out of commission, but there's really not a lot we can do about it. So I'd say August 1st is our next shot.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments on that? If not, I skipped introductions and didn't mean to. So let's start in the back here. We'll get the hideout people first. We'll start at the very back and come forward.
Jim Hunsaker, I'm the assistant to the
Thank you for
thanks for all this.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Chris Wislak from Murray City Engineering, and I'll be helping with Matt right now.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'm Elliot Setzer. I live in Murray, and I've been interested in the bike routes a lot. I've been on the advisory committee when it comes to.
Great. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, I'm Betsy Brown with the National Park Service River Strands and Conservation Assistance Program. And just FYI, our application period is open until June 30th. A little late if you want to submit an application for your community, but now's the time.
Cool. Brandon Stocks, also with the National Park Service.
Thank you. Phil Applegarth, Riverton City. Scott, we'll go to you and then just go around this way.
Scott Hess with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Dory Johnner, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Andrew Gruber, also with WFRC.
Jeff Sills, Randy Mill Creek.
Phil Sarnoff, Bike Utah.
Dan Bergenthal, Salt Lake City.
George Daenerys, Salt Lake County Municipal Services.
Jeff Euler, Davis County.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Tim Harps with Horrocks Engineers and the Green Bike Board.
Tom Millar with Alta Planning and Design.
Michelle Weeks for Draper City. I'm your new representative from Mountainland.
Muriel Stokes-Mill, WFRC.
William Watts.
Heidi Goodhart, UDOT Planning.
Matt DeLora, also UDOT.
James Ebert, Weber County.
Andrew Pearson, WFRC.
Thank you very much. I just, is there any other public comment before we move on?
Just want to say something.
Please, Bill.
Last week we kicked off a bicycle friendly driver training program. We took that trip to Fort Collins and Boulder last year. Fort Collins, Colorado has launched one 2 or 3 years ago and has been really successful. And we actually kicked it off last week with UTA new bus operator training. So now they get a 30 to 45 minute training on how to make sure bicycles stay safe out on the roadways, and we're starting to roll that out. We just met with UDOT yesterday to talk about how that might be integrated into training for UDOT employees, and we're looking at trying to have some public-facing training that the general public can utilize as well. So rolling it out slowly but surely. So if people have other connections or ideas for getting that moving a little more quickly, we'd love some support.
So. Let me ask just a question on that, if I can, Phil.
Sure.
Is it a lot video training or is it live training?
We have some flexibility there. With UTA, they have somebody that we've worked with and kind of trained them up, and she does all the new operator training, and we created a presentation and all the script and questions and content for that. With UDOT, we're kind of doing a combination of online, presentation with voiceover, and then eventually potentially moving into a video that we can create. So, and then online, we don't know at this point.
So you might look at a couple things, and this is certainly all we do is going to reach everybody, but I think it's very important. The directors of communications in the cities and in the counties and so forth, if you have a piece that they can put on the website, on Facebook and that, or you may want to bring them together for a meeting and train them face to face like you're doing the others, and then help them get that out over social media. Just a thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Any other comments?
An update real quick, like change hats. I'm on the board of directors for the Bicycle Collective, and on Saturday we had our yearly fundraising event, Bike Prom. And it was great. We had about 2,400 people show up for the pre-prom bike ride.
2,400?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was pretty, it was
like a mile long.
It was a mile and a half long.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's hysterical.
Yeah, and so like, thank goodness we had, like a full police escort and motorcade, closing signals in advance, but there were like significant delays on, 7th East and Fourth South and State Street, and
they should have been on a bike.
Yeah. So I think next year we'll probably do a travel advisory in conjunction with the event, because it was pretty significant. But anyway, we're still reviewing final ticket sales, but we probably had around 1,200 actually stay for prom at Gallivan Plaza, and it was quite a party. So maybe I'll give a little summary about at the next ATC meeting about what the final numbers were for the event. But it was awesome. Definitely a lot of people and outfits and on bicycles, and it was a really good community engagement opportunity. So it was fun.
That's fun, Heidi.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Yeah, the UDOT open house for Highway 89 will be held on the 20th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. at Layton High School. So if you're interested, go.
No answers. And then there's a way that you can get on their website. It's udot.utah.gov/US89. So if you can't make it to the open house, you can leave comments there. But Mayor Stevenson, who sits on this board, is all, or no, he doesn't sit on the board, but he sits on our council. Mm-hmm. Has been very proactive in working with UDOT on bicycle facilities along the frontage road system that was one of the options at one time up there. And I think that's what was looking at being the preferred, so.
Thank you.
Excellent. Any other comments? Okay, I'll move quickly to the chair's report. I just have one thing. Let me read this, so, because I think it's very well written. Governor Herbert announced plans to develop an additional 1,000 miles of family-friendly trails and bike paths over the next 10 years to provide and promote active connections to school, work, and outdoor recreation in urban and rural communities throughout the state. This goal will make a great impact on our region's activity transportation networks. I think that's cool. We would always want more. If he had said 5,000, we'd be five times as happy, but we're happy with 1,000, are we not? And it's a good move and a good direction, and I appreciate what the governor's doing. We will now move to item number 4, developing bicycle networks. Scott, are you handling that?
Actually, we're going to Dan Bergenthal.
Okay. Dan, please.
Okay. It's running. Okay. Well, thanks for having me here this morning to talk about this. Talked to Scott a little bit about it, and over the years we've talked about how Salt Lake City has done a lot of their implementation and how we've been able to do a lot of it for really low cost. And so I wanted to talk with y'all a little bit about that. So back in 2010, Salt Lake City passed its first complete streets ordinance. Complete streets policy or ordinance ensures that the right-of-way is planned, designed, and operated to provide safe access for all users. I'm sure you're all very familiar with this. There's been a lot of presentations in the past over complete streets ordinances.
So was that a before and after of that same street?
Was that that and that?
No, go back and back.
The dirt trail.
Yeah. So that to...
Oh. No, it's, well, So the next step when you're trying to get these facilities out on the street is to include your infrastructure planning in a document, whether that be a specific bicycle pedestrian master plan or some more type of general plan for your city. Those type of plans demonstrate the community's willingness to install these type of facilities. Willingness and commitment, I guess I should say. Another thing that's very important is that you collaborate with your regional partners. With us, that would be UDOT, Wasatch Front Regional Council, Salt Lake County. Make sure that your bicycle facilities get in the plans that they have. For example, UCATS, Regional Transportation Plan as well. Those type of plans, you need to be working to have your stuff show up in there so that when you go out and try to get funding, that is one of the questions they asked. Is your proposed project part of a regional plan and local plan? Okay, so once you have all this in place, you're ready to implement, ready to move out and get it built. So how do you do that for the lowest cost? Well, the first thing you can do is have your staff go out and simply measure the roads, right? we have found in Salt Lake City initially that we were able to install a lot of stuff. There was just room. You could just go out there and stripe it in. We have wide streets, obviously, but I'm assuming that other communities in Utah also have wide streets, at least some. So you can just simply go out and put these in. Very low cost. That is, one of the things you have to remember is that in Salt Lake City, we have a staff that works on these type of projects. You need to have somebody on board locally within the city who is working on bike projects or pedestrian projects. You know, sometimes you can just designate that to your city engineer or his staff, and they can work on those things. But there really needs to be somebody locally that, that can do these things for you. The next step then, or another way to implement these facilities, probably this is the way that we've gotten most of ours in, is to piggyback on projects that are regular maintenance projects throughout the city, pavement maintenance projects. These type of projects wipe out the existing striping that are on the road. They go in and you get a fresh, clean slate. Right? I mean, they just repave it, you got black pavement, and you can do what you want on it. So there are a number of different types of projects that do this. This one here is it's a mill and overlay project. You have different types of surface treatments. You have slurry seals, chip seals, cape seals. All these projects do the same thing. They wipe out all the existing stripes. That's a picture of a slurry seal going down. Chip seals are a little bit more controversial with bicyclists just because you have the stones that are placed on the roadway. You get a lot of loose stones. Some of them are sharp. They cause problems with tires. But there is a way to get around that. We've looked into it. And if you have the right kind of stone and you sweep well, you can actually get a pretty good project in, and it works for bicyclists. So if you need information on that, feel free to get in touch with us. Next step then would be to tie into your maintenance process. And you have all these projects going on out there, but if you don't know when they're going to happen, you can't plan. So get with your maintenance people and figure out when they're going to be working in certain areas. In Salt Lake City, the city is divided up into 7 different areas, and each area is hit each year. Right? So in 7 years, you go through the entire city. Now, they don't hit every road in every area, but for example, if they're doing area 5 or whatever, we will go in and sit down with our pavement people and find out which roads are up for this particular year, and we'll look at our plans. If we have a project on those roads, then we'll work with them to make sure that that when they restripe, they restripe in a way that get those facilities out there.
Does that go both ways? Does Public Works have a copy of your plan and they flag to you, or is it always proactively, like you going to the streets department with your plan and seeing what their projects are?
They have the complete street ordinance just like we do, so they are aware of how important it is, but they are not actively watching the roads. They'll give us a list and we have to go to them. But they're more than willing to work with us now because of these ordinances and policies that we have in place.
So you don't grade your roads with, you know, whether they're good, bad, or ugly. You kind of help them every 7 years, no matter what category they're in, or do you slurry each road, you know, in 7 years, or is that
engineering will take a look at the roads? They go out and do a survey,
okay,
and so they know which roads need work to be done in that particular year. So it's up to them. They have a schedule that they're following.
Because I know in Draper, some of my residents would love to have their roads re-slurried every 7 years. You know, that'd be pretty great.
It's not every 7 years that they get. It's okay. Just certain ideal roads, right? In each area. Yeah, it'd be ideal that you could do every road. I think we're on like a 400-year maintenance schedule right now. Somewhere around.
That sounds better. I was like, whoa, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, we don't have that much money.
That's our strategy for traffic calming.
Slows them down.
Yeah. Where are the books?
Yeah, so most of the time, the winter before, we start working with them to make sure that everything is planned out for the summer. So how much can you save? Well, if you're going to go out and you're going to slurry it yourself, if it's not on any schedule and you have to get all the money to come in, just for the bike project, it's going to cost you, at least what we've seen, about $40,000 to $60,000 per mile, per roadway mile. And that includes both sides. If you can piggyback, it ends up being about $1,000 to $2,000. So it's a huge difference. But once again, you have to have the staff on board. You have to have somebody on staff who is able to draw these striping plans up for you. Small grants make a huge difference. The county has a grant program now. You know, if you can come up with $10,000, you can put in a few bike projects. So you really can do this cheaply.
Dan, how many of these projects were designed in your master plan to a spec that could be actually implemented? Or if you have your master plan well enough defined and then you have a set of like AASHTO design guidelines, can that help a small community who may not have a designer on staff who can actually draw it? Or have you guys just benefited from that?
Our master plans don't have any design in them. It just designates which road that we'd like to have a bicycle facility on. At the time that we know which road is available, then we will go and we will sit down internally and then we'll measure it, say, okay, what can we do? But yeah, then we have designers in-house.
We're not, I wouldn't consider us a small city. I'd consider us a medium size, but a smaller city in certainly Salt Lake County. And we have in our engineering staff, he's not full-time for bikes, but he is our designated engineer with bikes. And so he tries to correlate very, very well with the maintenance projects and so forth too. So I think any size city can have someone be aware of it. You would have a department of it. If we have a quarter time of it or something like that, it helps as well. So
yeah.
Anyway, just a thought. I appreciate what you're informing us. Go ahead, Derek.
Okay.
Scott, did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
So right along those lines, how do you find the space for the bike lanes on these roads? Well, there's a number of different ways. There's already space, just put them in, like I said. Sometimes you have space, it's just there already. Other times you have the existing lanes, but it doesn't appear that there's room unless you change something. We have been able to reduce our travel lane widths in a lot of instances. We take them down to 10 feet. By doing that, you gain space on the road, and you can fit those bike lanes in. There are manuals that help you do this. You've got the AASHTO Green Book, you've got the AASHTO Guidelines to Bicycle Facilities, and you also have NACTO. All of those type of documents help you to determine how to put these in and have design. Another way that we have found that has been very successful is reducing the number of travel lanes on some roads where the volume allows. And the most common is taking it from a four-lane to a three-lane section roadway, otherwise known as a road diet. We try to call them roadway reconfigurations, because for some reason road diet, the public doesn't like that.
Nobody likes a diet.
No, they don't like a diet, so we try to call it a reconfiguration.
You call it a diet in January, and then by March, you call it a diet.
Exactly. That's the word in January.
By December, you're loosening your belt again, right?
Yeah.
So one wonderful thing about going from a four-lane to a three-lane road is that it turns out that a three-lane road is safer for all modes that are using the road. Bikes, peds, cars. You typically will see a 30% reduction in crashes on the road. It's easier to cross a street as a pedestrian because you only have one travel lane now in each direction. So it's the active roadway area is less. The cars are pushed out more towards the center of the road, so those who are walking on the sidewalks, it's much more pleasant because the cars are just that much further away from you. Bicyclists, obviously, you'll get a bike lane if you typically go from a four to a three. So this is an example right here. This is 9th West between North Temple and 10th North. We did this back in 2013, and you can see the photo there, before and after. There's parking. Before it was parking with four lanes, afterwards it was parking with bike lanes and three lanes. And it is working very well. I haven't had any issues at all with that. Another one that we did that same year was 13th South between State and 7th East. There's some before and after shots there. This particular roadway had time-restricted parking on both sides with four lanes. After, we went to no parking with bike lanes and three lanes. And surprisingly, the residents didn't object at all to removing the parking because having time restricted parking was not used anyways because they were afraid to park the cars out there, because it was pretty dangerous in my view, because they're parked out there, people are driving in that outside lane, all of a sudden they've got a parked car in front of them. Just wasn't the ideal design. So with 13th South, we just recently did a study, an after study, to find out what the impact was. The volumes remained essentially the same. So on a three-lane road can handle up to 20,000 vehicles, about the same way that a four-lane road can. This roadway had about 15,000 to 16,000 on it, and it still does. The volumes did not change. The 85 percentile speed, or the typical speed that cars were traveling, dropped from 40 to 31.
What's the posted on that?
Posted is 30. Okay. So brought it right in line for where we wanted it.
I thought it was 15.
Yeah, right. It's 15. And the overall crashes dropped by 29%, which was right in line with what the national studies are saying happens. So we're pretty pleased with that.
Dan, it's sort of intuitively, if you're not a traffic engineer, going from four lanes, two and two, to three with a center seems like it would reduce vibe. And you're living the proposal right now to convert 21st South through Sugar House from four lanes
to three.
So can you explain how it can be that if you're taking away a lane of traffic, your volume, your capacity remains the same?
Yeah, we get this question a lot. Last week I presented at a community council, and that was one person was telling me I was just insane because there's no way you can put four lanes of traffic into two lanes of traffic. And yeah, intuitively they're not getting it. And how it works is you don't have a solid stream of traffic in both travel lanes while all four travel lanes constantly moving. And then you're gonna try and cram that all in two. If that's the way it was, yeah, it wouldn't work. Right? Because you're essentially, you would be 25, 30,000 cars per day or more to be able to have that situation on a four-lane road. But you have, if you go out and stand and look at any four-lane road, when the cars are going down the road, they're staggered. A lot of times you'll have just one car coming through. And so there's all this extra space that they're not being utilized to their full capacity. So when you take them and put it on a three-lane section, it simply works just because a three-lane section can handle that capacity.
Yeah, it depends on your level of service, right? Mm-hmm. The level of service, the LOS, right? Like,
yes.
What was your level of service before you reduced the lanes? Do you know?
We did not determine that.
But exactly what you're saying, like as long as there's enough capacity already.
As long as the capacity is there, it'll work. Yeah. Okay. What you'll typically find is that on the three-lane, you'll get more backups at the traffic signals. The queues will be longer. But generally, you'll get them through on the same signal cycle.
Do you have a dedicated right-hand turn lane in traffic signals, or just
we try to if we have room?
Pardon me.
We try to if there is room. But for example, on this one, there is not. You can see there. You have a dedicated left turn lane.
Right.
But not a right.
Okay.
And so another reason why it works so well is because on a four-lane roadway, when someone's turning left, they're sitting right in the middle of the road, right in the middle of a travel lane, and that backs up traffic. Mm-hmm. You get them out of there, and now the flow just keeps moving. And the reason why the crashes are reduced so much is that same reason. You get a car stopping in that left through lane, and you get a lot of rear ends, and you also get sideswipe crashes, people changing, going back and forth in the lanes. Someone stops to make a left turn, someone dives over into the outside lane, and this crash. You also have the case where you've got two cars facing each other, both turning left. One turns left, and here comes a car in the outside lane in the other direction. You can't see that car, and you get a lot of those crashes as well. All of those are eliminated. When I looked at this, I read through every crash report to find out what actually happened with all these crashes. And every single one of those types of crashes that I just spoke about, those types, completely eliminated. With the three-lane section. And yeah, it dropped 29% in that section of the road. So.
We've had success explaining it to people too, illustrating those in diagrams, but also explaining you're eliminating the side friction of the outside or inside lanes where you just don't have
people are again stopping to get into their driveways, and that's holding traffic up or causing the flow of traffic to switch lanes that will initiate a crash or avoidance. So you have a lot of stopping, starting conditions. But it is politically very tough. We have two project proposals. We completed studies on Murray Holiday Road and St. Leonard West and Magna. Both these are on hold pending presentations, but I think Holiday City, who Mill Creek shares the road with, we're on hold pending, you know, to help get Mill Creek, you know, a little more stable. But we'd like to make those presentations on those safety reports and recommendations. But Murray Holiday Road is one of those roads that fits that category. You have a volume that just doesn't need that capacity for multiple lanes.
Dan, have you had any examples where you have the road diet that you're going from, you know, two specific intersection to intersection? What happens on either end where it goes back to the standard cross section? Have you had Public Works delay projects in order to get a longer cross section at a time? Or are you guys piecemealing these over time?
Sometimes we've had to extend the slurry seal or the road work a little bit beyond the intersection to accommodate whatever the striping design is. Mm-hmm. That's typically what we do.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys have been okay putting in pieces of infrastructure over time, knowing it's not like the full mile, 2 miles or whatever. You put in little chunks over time.
Yes, well, typically they're not too small. I mean, this particular project, it was 0.9 miles, almost a whole mile. That's probably the shortest that we've done. 21st South, the one that we're working on right now, is the same distance. It's just under a mile. And we have a open house coming up on the 22nd, if any of you are interested. There's information about that on our website. But yeah, we're right in the middle of trying to implement another one of these. And it's always very interesting because the public, they're divided. I think they're more in support right now, but those who are against make a lot of noise. And so we try to point them to these other successes that we've had, tell them, hey, go drive these, see for yourself what they're like. We'll see what happens on this one. This is 21st South between 17th East and 23rd East. And it's got about 16,000, same volume as this section of roadway. So we feel it's going to work well, and we're going to get bike lanes out of it as well. But one thing, we're not pushing that as a bike lane project. It's a safety project. Really, it is a safety project. And oh, by the way, we can fit bike lanes. We have the room, so we might as well put them in. Mm-hmm. So, works. So that's it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any questions for Dan? Any other questions before we move on? Hey, Scott, we'll turn the time to you.
All right. So I just wanted to talk a little bit. We've been updating the committee on our Wasatch Choice 2050 and the 2019 to 2050 Regional Transportation Plan development. Last meeting, we went over the keypad polling results of what we heard back from the Active Transportation Committee, as well as at the scenario workshops, where we went out to 10 specific areas within the region, from Brigham City to Bluffdale, covering all of our municipalities, and discuss with you what those pieces of feedback were. And I'll just remind you that the scenario workshop folks, as well as the Active Transportation Committee, preferred more separation between bikes and cars in general, and whether that's multi-use paths or bike lanes that are more separated than a standard bike lane was the number one priority, with the lowest priority being wider multi-use sidewalks, which, if you're familiar with North Temple's stretch of a multi-use sidewalk, you've got slow bikes and peds, was our example we used there, or standard bike lanes that are mixed in traffic were the two lower priorities for our communities. As we're moving this forward, the next process, I just wanted to let you know what we're thinking. So our current regional transportation plan has a priority bicycle routes network in it. It doesn't identify bicycle route type. It's just really a location map of those bike routes. I mean, there's some really simplistic typologies in the UCATS map, but it's the old class 1, class 2, class 3. But it doesn't get into the matrix of buffered bike lane, protected bike lane. So we're going to be looking at a measure from the Salt Lake County bicycle best practices that has road speeds and volumes in order to help us determine what we think is the best type per type of roadway, or bicycle facility type per type of roadway. And we're going to be bringing that map out to our local planners and engineers on the 21st. So we've got technical advisory committee meetings that, you know, any of the elected officials in the room, I'd make sure that your planners and engineers are planning on attending those TAC meetings. We have one in the morning in Bluffdale on the 21st and one in the afternoon in Clearfield. Standard times for our TAC meetings, but the information we'll be trying to collect in that meeting is land use and all of our modes, including active transportation. But this particular one will be this road speed and volume, and we're meeting with our UDOT partners prior to that meeting. The other thing that we've heard a lot from these scenario workshops is inclusion of sidewalk in our bicycle and pedestrian planning and truly making it an active transportation plan. Right now our RTP does not talk at all about sidewalks, but we intend on rolling together three products that will make up our new RTP. So one is going to be this regional transportation plan map, kind of the continuation of what we've had today with road speed and volume typologies, and then we're going to phase that plan. So we're going to do phasing the way we do on highway and transit projects. So we have an estimated number of miles or estimated number of projects we think we can build over the next 10 years, fiscally constrained to some point. And then the other two products that don't exist today is a regional point projects map. This is going to be grade separated crossings as well as first last mile improvements. So we have UTA's first last mile study that has approximately 1,000 projects across the region that we're going to roll directly into the RTP for the local communities as well. And then those point projects, we've been collecting comments from our scenario workshop maps and stakeholder engagement of, you know, this is a dangerous crossing on Highway 89, or these crossings at Bangor are dangerous, or Jordan River still needs, you know, these few crossings to be grade separated. So we're putting those in the map just to highlight those specific point projects. And then the third product is the regional sidewalk map. So we have GIS intern do a regional sidewalk map that included Tooele, Weber, and Morgan. If you're not familiar with our area, we go into Box Elder County, but we're Weber, Davis, Morgan, Tooele, Salt Lake counties. And so we have a regional sidewalk map that covers our entire area that are the local collectors and above. So if you'd like to, if as a city, if you want to participate in that map, we'd love to continue to collect base map data at a local level, but we have all the collector and above, which is basically UDOT facilities or higher speed facilities, and we have an understanding of where there's no sidewalk on a single side, where that is, the gaps that exist, and that'll be a product of our RTP map, our regional transportation plan map as well. So all three of these will ultimately roll together and become an actual active transportation map instead of just a regional priority bicycle routes map. So I'd encourage you to come on the 21st. We'll keep working on this preferred scenario for active transportation as well as all of our other modes, land use map with centers, roadway and transit, and move, you know, come back out to the locals in another scenario workshop the first of 2018 with adoption of the map in summer of 2019.
So once more, Scott, 21st, where at?
So the first meeting in the morning.
Bluffdale City,
right.
Their new city hall.
You'll publish the schedule out.
It should have been sent to people on our regional growth committee, technical advisory committee, so the planners. And then we also included the engineers that are on our Transcom technical advisory committee. So if you're on one of those lists, you've seen the emails going out for those. But it's at the new city hall in Bluffdale, I believe 9 o'clock on Wednesday. For Salt Lake County, for Weber, Davis, Box Elder County, it's at 2 o'clock at Clearfield City Hall.
Right. We can send those. We'll look forward those meeting notices out to the ATC group.
Okay. Are you taking item number 6?
Yeah, so if you look just past the minutes, we have a copy here on, you know, I wanted to do these glossy and laminated, and you know, all you got the standard printed copy.
Laminated?
Just kidding.
We're a humble government agency. We don't have money for lamination.
if you laminate, you can check mark and, you know, change it. So we have, if you remember last month, we talked about the active transportation plan standards. This has been a group effort with two different consulting firms, both MPOs, county representatives, UDOT, UTA, coming together to discuss what actually needs to be in a local plan in order for it to be considered an active transportation plan, as opposed to lines on a map that are rolled into public works, streets plan, or a general plan document that might indicate some trails. And these were the decided upon standards. The Active Transportation Committee has reviewed these. We made, Tom Millar with Alta Planning made those recommendations and changes in here. I think this is inclusive and represents what we think makes up an active transportation plan. And it really sets the bar for what you can do at a local level. So if you use this as a guidance document for your planning departments who plan on doing general plan updates or bike plans, ped plans, this would be a great place to start. We understand this isn't a how to plan document or a design document, and we didn't want to go down that road. There are those products that exist already, how to create a full bike and pedestrian plan. This is just an objective way for our region, who has 60 plus municipalities, to go through our partners' plans and determine which ones have all of these elements, which communities may be able to benefit from having more information in some of their plans, and then using our funding programs like the TLC program, Transportation Land Use Connection program, to hopefully encourage and incentivize local communities to do new active transportation plans where they're out of date. So any questions, concerns? We had a lot of comments on this last meeting, and I think we've rolled them all together. But
did you include the maintenance?
We did, yep. So there's...
in a couple places, right?
Right. So under programs, recommendations programs, there's a maintenance plan that's recommended, and I think it's somewhere else too.
In six.
Thank you. Yeah, implementation strategy, capital and maintenance cost estimates and budget.
Thank you.
Yes. Did you get a copy of this?
No.
Do you have the packet?
No.
Yeah. Make sure you have the packet.
There you go, Elliot.
Okay, anything else?
No.
All right, thank you very much.
Do you have any, Tom worked on this really, Bill, and did you guys have any other comments on that?
The only other thing I'd add is right now we're kind of working with along the Wasatch Front, for Wasatch Front counties primarily, to determine which communities have plans that either need plans or have plans that maybe need to be updated. So the hope being that we can kind of create a map of where these are the communities that are good to go and have something that we feel confident is going to help them achieve their goals that are in their plan, and other communities that maybe need some assistance from the program Scott mentioned. So the hope is that we'll have something prior to the next funding cycle from WFRC, so that if there are communities that are interested in pursuing a plan, then we can loop them right into that.
Phil, will that be a pretty self-explanatory document?
In terms of the...
If you get the document, you can understand easily what it's saying.
Which one's this?
That's this. We're working off of this.
No. What I'm talking about is
the assessment of
what cities need to be updated or don't.
Yeah. We're
that might be something that for Salt Lake County is handed out at a COG meeting. It could be done just very quickly, and contact information on there, help information, and so forth. But that is your best. Well, emailing at these mayors is the best, and that could be one way too. But that is the best where you have people in right there. And so it may be to do a presentation in a COG or a conference of mayors, and then email it out to everybody as well.
Yeah, and my hope at least, I don't know if the other partners feel this way, is to have a map that shows which communities have them, which are in process or which do not, so that hopefully it's really explicit and hopefully creates some competition. So
well, and the poor mayors have so much coming at them. If they have a piece of paper,
absolutely,
that they can go home and say, okay, what's happening on this with whomever is handling this?
No, you're fine. And with that map that Phil was talking about, we did an initial evaluation, but without a plan standards document, it was really like a, you know, thumb in the wind test of does this pass or does this not pass? Is this an active transportation plan? Well, it feels like it because it's kind of new, but, and so this is a really good way for us to just, you check the boxes and it passes and it doesn't. And then if a mayor at a COG says, well, our bike plan's really good and we think it's really great and you can say it is really great, this would make it an active transportation plan. And it's something we can stand on, I guess, as opposed to.
Wait, maybe we ought to have you come to either to whichever's the closest, because it's the same people there. Mm-hmm. COG's a little different makeup, but but we get all the city people there on the Congress of Mayors, and have you come and go over this and go over the map as well.
Yeah, if I might, I would suggest. I think it's a great idea.
Or whatever you help me.
No,
with
I think it's a great idea, and you know, there's two mayors here from Salt Lake County, and if you guys think that's a good idea, then terrific. You know, Commissioner Ebert from Weber County, if you think that this would be something that would be good for WACOG, a similar kind of presentation discussion at WACOG, and then Jeff, you know, if you thought that at Davis COG that would be good. I imagine Scott and Phil would be open to doing a bit of a roadshow on this and, you know, getting an audience and giving this information to the local communities all around the region.
And I know Alpine, you know, Highland and Lehigh, and I represent Draper on both sides, but, you know, I know they're getting very into active transportation and more biking, and it'd be interesting to see what you could do with BAG too.
Yeah, and actually, it's a great point, and I didn't say Utah County in what I was just saying, because I know Jim Price, who works at MAG, has really led out on a lot of this work and has been working with the communities, and we can touch base with him. But I think he's already done a lot of what we're talking about doing here.
Well, a lot of this came from the mind of Jim.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Good to know. I didn't know that.
And from UDOT Planning's perspective, like, this document will really help just elevate and create kind of a standard level of what plans mean and what the expectation for the planning process is, because it's hugely variable across the state. So we're going to be kind of launching this plan standards in within our Move Utah program, which is an active transportation community planning initiative at the state. So it's like the rebrand of Road Respect. Which I'll hopefully be able to give an update on our next ATC meeting.
So, I mean, stating the obvious, then this, all of this should be quite, as Mayor Applegarth said, I'm quoting you, the poor mayors get so much stuff thrown at them. And they do, right? And it's when you hear one group saying, well, we're talking to you about active transportation, and another group says, we're here to talk to you about active transportation, it gets a little confusing, right? So it's been part, it's our job as organizations to coordinate that stuff together. Yeah. So I think we take that as a to-do with you guys to figure out what the best approach is, and then follow back up with the COGs around the region.
That'd be great.
Great. That's great.
Okay. You don't have anything else, Scott, do you?
So we'll
except the dates?
No. So we'll go through agency county program updates and just ask folks around the room if they'll.
Yeah, I'll do that in just a moment. I just want to draw your attention to the next meeting. You can read. But draw your attention to the next meeting and the important dates. And so we want to walk out of this room in 15 minutes. So we're going to hold you to the closing time. If you can be as concise as you can, but get your message across, that's what we would shoot for. And so we will open that now to the agencies and the cities, the county programs, updates, anything that you would like to share with the group. So. The floor is yours. Let's just jump in and move this through so we can get good conversation.
We'll do the first update. Last week we had our first Strava training. UDOT has the data. We're working with the AGRC right now to make it easily available and downloadable for our partners and our consultants.
Tell me what that training is. I don't know that.
It was a GIS training.
Okay,
so
got it.
A little bit more of a technical look. Or in-depth look at the data.
Okay.
But we've hired Matt Delora, who's here today, as our intern, who's going to be exclusively focused in on the technical analysis of the Strava data, helping us with visualizations, analysis work on projects, corridors, geographical areas. So I'm bringing him along because he's new and kind of drinking from the fire hose at the moment, getting acquainted with everyone. But yeah, so that's the update from UDOT. The Strava data is mostly live, and we're taking requests for that kind of on an as-needed basis until we have full coordination with AGRC on how to download it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So maybe a plug, Heidi, would be, since we're now utilizing Strava data, is that we're going on this mobile tour here in 15 minutes. You
download
want to download the app right now. You can see how, as a user, and what it tracks, you can and how useful it is for the tour, and maybe you'll start using it for all your activities.
Is anybody in here a Strava user?
Two times this week.
I won't go get into the commute, not commute. There's not enough users.
But
download it and we'll all Strava the ride today, and then we'll have to heat map.
Blow up.
We'll
see who did the ride fastest.
Exactly.
Right. Well, and even if you're even if you're driving, just go 15 miles an hour and just leave it on.
Okay. Any other agency you want to share something?
Yeah, I was going to say that the public comment period for the Transportation Improvement Program will start on Saturday, July 1st and go through August 5th. That'll be for the 2018 to 2023 TIP. And that, is my understanding, is also like we're coordinating with the other agencies so that we'll have the same public comment period for the STIP and all of that. So obviously those projects identified in the draft TIP are, you know, have some active transportation components as well.
Thank you.
Same public comment period. The RTP amendment number 4 is open for that public comment period also.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to say something else?
Dave Iltis in the back.
Okay.
I don't know if people have this, but the Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City has a brand new bike now. So do people have this already here?
I'll take one.
Yeah.
Okay. 90,000 copies of it in my office.
Anything else?
You haven't memorized many of them.
Okay, any other agencies? Please, Andrew.
So the legislatively created Transportation Governance and Funding Task Force is underway. I know many of you, some of you have been paying really close attention to that. One of the things that that task force is looking at is active transportation. There's a working group, there's three working groups of that task force, funding, governance, and you might call it a policy group, that's looking at, that third one is looking at economic development, land use, and active transportation. And so one of the, what we hope emerges from the work of that task force is enhanced consideration by the legislature, by the state, of active transportation. UDOT's very involved in working on that, as are we and UTA. But I just want to make sure everybody knows that that issues of how to fund and how to structure transportation in our state is something that's getting a lot of attention right now through this task force. In fact, this afternoon, the task force is meeting and is accepting public comment. So that's the primary purpose of this meeting's of this afternoon's meeting, which starts at 1 o'clock up at the Capitol.
Senate Room 210.
Some of you will be there, is my understanding, right?
Yeah, so good. You know, and so it's an opportunity for folks, if you have anything that you care about, including ensuring that we're promoting active transportation as a state and as local communities, this is a venue to do that. If you can make it today, that's great. If you can't make it today, that's fine. But you know, pay attention. There's a website on the legislative website. It has all the information about that task force. And maybe if we do follow up here, we can shoot that out also. But it's an exciting opportunity to look at the funding and policy for transportation in the state, including active transportation.
What was the name of the task force again?
The Transportation Governance and Funding Task Force.
It is historically significant, in my opinion. It is really, sometimes you have task forces that are put together that are, they're just sugar-coated, kind of. This is with Senator Harper as one of the chairs. This is really a get after and get something done.
Yeah,
and it has to be completed by December, if my memory's right.
Yes, that's when they're supposed to report. Commissioner Ebert is going to be serving as a member of the working group that's looking at the active transportation, economic development, and land use also.
Great.
Yeah.
And Andrew, did you want to also mention the governor's recently announced initiative for Utah Life Elevated 2020?
That's what I think the Mayor Applegarth was referring to at the beginning with 1,000 miles of,
yes.
of trails.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Please, other comments, things you want to share? Thank you, Dan.
The Jordan River Bridge is proceeding construction. Supposedly this week or the following week, next week, the first girders are going to be placed. But pretty much all of the Collins events are in now, and it's on schedule.
What's your estimated time on that? Do you have?
They're still saying early November.
Early November?
Yep.
Okay. And is the trail, I haven't been on the trail that far north, the Jordan River Trail. For quite a while. Is that trail now all along the Jordan River, or do you have to exit and go through a neighborhood and come back to the trail still? Or
it's all complete except between Second South and North Temple.
Okay, great. So it's an easy trip. I mean, not easy, but it's one you can find readily, because we want to push this in our community to have them ride it, and that's my answer.
When that's done, that's where the plan, right, is that we tie the completion of that to the big event for the Golden Spoke.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So the hope is that that is done before it gets too cold.
That's why.
And that Jeff's
gas is done.
Yeah.
So what's the timing on that?
Reopening.
May 1st. Okay.
No.
Wow. All right. That's what you were talking about at the beginning of the meeting. Okay. So let's. You guys make sure that stuff gets done soon. Okay. And then I actually talked with isn't it the bridge is on Rocky Mountain Power property. Isn't that right?
Part of it is.
Okay. So they reached out, their community relations director, and said, we're really excited about this event, the Golden Spoke. We want to be a private sponsor. I mean, as a private entity, they want to be a sponsor of the event. So, you know, there's this it's coming together. We just need to make sure that the actual pieces come together.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Since
okay.
I'm a vice chair of the Jordan River Commission, we're very excited about that bridge being.
Cool. You know, this is our recreational department thought of this for us because we want to do something along it. I don't know if this is good for everybody, and maybe it's not good for us. But if every community had a pin that you could pick up as you went through that, with some kind of a historical design on it, it might be something fun to do, like you had in the Olympics and so forth. We had pins in the Olympics. It's a cool idea. But that may not be your thing.
Because your hands are going to be really cold when you're writing. Make them big pins.
Okay. Boy, that idea is somewhere down there, but maybe it'll float up someday. Anyway, any other comments?
I just have a quick question.
Please.
I'm new, as you know, because it's the first time I've ever showed up here. But we have a very active Parks and Trails Commission in Draper, in our little committee. Would this be something that I should give the Parks and Trails Commission in Draper and make sure that they're up to speed? I don't know if they are or not. It might just be great to make sure everybody's on board with what we're looking for.
There's no problem with that at all.
As well as the Public Works, your Public Works department.
Ours is in engineering. We do a lot of our own design. I'm not sure how you do it in Draper, but the technical part, as George is saying, is important. Public Works, engineering, whomever is handling it.
I just wanted to add, in addition to all of the purposes that Scott, Phil, and Heidi included about regional connectivity and assessment, that the plan standards also form a skeleton of sorts of a scope that you could put out if you were to hire a consultant so that you don't have to think of it by yourself, and it takes all the guesswork out of how the plan's going to be structured, but also how that scope can be structured so that you can advertise to people with the same standards as Sandy and the same standards as Riverton, and so that when all these plans are done and they've all met the standards, you have this sort of regional plan, but they're implementable at the city level.
You know, Michelle, for us at least, I think the most important thing we've done some striping we're looking at improving some trails that have been neglected in that. But with all of that, and those are extremely important, the master plan that Riverton completed last year, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whatever it was, is the most important thing we've done for several reasons. One, it gives us a working document. Secondly, it gives a big sign to the community that we are serious. And thirdly, the community had input into it. Not as many people as I would like, but still had input into it. And it's a common thing with our council now. They accept that. They haven't had to put any money out yet because we've had grants, but their day is coming. And you know, when you have a document, it gives legitimacy to the budget.
And we just did an open space master plan not too long ago, but I just wanted to make sure that is in line with this.
Yeah, and the bike master plan is different than an open space unless you've included that into it. And we found to hire a professional planner was very important to us for the quality of the general active transportation plan in mind.
Who did your plan?
Thank you very much.
Tom.
Tom's out planning.
I didn't know whether I should advertise it.
I didn't mean my comment to be like
that. Yeah, it was excellent. Okay. We have time for one last comment, if someone has one.
I just want to direct the board members and staff to the important dates coming up. So we have an out-of-state mobile active transportation tour coming up. It's in Minnesota. We're going to go out there and see... I can't believe I just blanked on that.
Robin.
Thank you. Robin Hutchison. We're going to go out and see Robin. Wow, it was there and gone.
Soon's forgotten. She's not going to be happy.
Welcome to parenthood.
Seriously. So these are typically, you know, focused invites, or it's limited just by the number of people we can fit on a van in Minnesota and our capacity. So we have approximately 12 or so spaces. Yeah. If you or, you know, your engineer, your public works director, somebody would be interested in going on this. Last year's tour, we went to Boulder. It was extremely helpful. We had Commissioner from Weber County Gibson on there, Mayor Stevenson from Layton City, and conversations that were had on that mobile active transportation tour came back and led directly into a meeting with UDOT's Region 1 about Highway 89 and in putting bikes, you know, making sure the bikes are accommodated on Highway 89. And that was elevated to the surface of Mayor Stevenson's focus at that time, because he saw how good this can be. You know, you go out and you ride some inspiring infrastructure, and the timing couldn't work out better to go on this mobile active transportation tour, see some amazing things, and then come back and apply to our funding sources at WFRC to help you get a master plan and implement some of the projects in your community. So that's planned for September 10th and 11th. It's a single day tour. Fly out on the 10th, which is Sunday. On the 11th, we'll ride from the morning into the early afternoon, and then you could fly out that afternoon. So,
or stay for the National Walking Summit.
Or stay, yep. So,
what's the next day?
The National Walking Summit is happening just after the tour.
Yep, Wednesday through Friday. So that's, I'm planning on attending that. WFRC has a poster session that we're going to be showing if you're, you know, want to see more and more and more of what we do. But let me know if you're interested. Right now we have a few folks set on that, but we're really going to ramp up our invites and see if we can get folks to attend.
And if you have suggestions, yes, too, we have a flyer. I mean, we're looking for not just people who are on the fence and need the pushover. We need people who are enthusiastic about it and want to see some great infrastructure they can build. We need people who are maybe on the fence who need a little bit of a nudge. And if there are people in communities who are not supportive, sometimes it's nice to reflect in the glow of, you know, Mayor Caldwell and how excited he is about bicycles. And this year you get to reflect in the glow of Mayor Applegarth.
Right.
So
he's glowing today.
Yeah, absolutely. That wasn't just phrasing. That was literal. So,
it's not a joke.
So if people have suggestions, send Scott or myself an email, and you can extend invites or figure out who the best person is to make that invitation.
I need to learn how to dress for a meeting and also ride a bike. My whole psychic is, that you have closed for a meeting and closed for a bike, right?
It's not mutually exclusive.
I don't know.
The key, Mayor, is 10% spandex in your clothes.
Yeah.
Why, is that true?
Yeah, and it stretches real well.
It's terribly
my pants right now are stretchy.
Not the cotton kind of pants I wear and stuff.
You can do cotton, but it just has to have a little bit of some synthetic.
Oh, okay. Because certainly before I go to the transportation meeting at 1 o'clock, I have to find a phone booth to get in.
Yeah, no, you have to go like that. That's right. You should go exactly like that. Make a statement.
No, I've made too many statements on the hill. Sometimes they're ready to
say something right out. I'll sit next to you.
You need to make a movement to adjourn.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Second? All in favor, say aye.
Let's ride.
2 minutes over.
And we're, Phil, we're meeting right out by the bike racks out
here. Scott, we're meeting right out there by the bike.